at Hebrews chapter 12 and starting at verse 1. Our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith.
in 1945, we had to flee from the Russian army. By boat, we reached Denmark and had to stay there in a refugee camp for 3.5 years. I mentioned in a sermon a few months ago that a refugee camp is not the best place to live, but despite all the hardship, it can also be a place of blessing. Among the refugees, there was a pastor and his wife. Both of them loved the Lord, and they were really committed to serve the people there. They had no children of their own, but Frau Pfarrer had a special heart for children. Every Sunday, she organized Sunday school for about 1,000 children. Yes, 1,000. One of them was I. There was good Bible teaching. We learned key Bible verses by heart and hymns. Even today, most Bible portions and hymns I know by heart, I know from that Sunday school in refugee camp. Many years later, we were married, Sigge and I. We visited this pastor's couple in a village near Black Forest. And the lady recalled, "You, Rudy, were always sitting in the front row with your eyes wide open." I don't remember that. Then in 1948, we found a new home in South Germany. I finished school and started professional training. Now you may think that I walked with the Lord at that time. Sorry, I did not. I was not against God or against any of the biblical teachings. In my subconscious, I believed in God and I respected him. But practically, I lived as an atheist, without asking for his will for my life, without talking things over with him. Maybe you know the verse from Proverbs 23, verse 26. "My son, give me your heart and let your eyes keep to my ways." Honestly, this was not my desire. Of course, I was a regular churchgoer, 2 times every year, at Christmas and Easter. But anyway, I lived my own daily life. I did not live a bad life, nothing immoral, nothing criminal or so. And if somebody had asked me, "Are you a Christian?" I would have answered yes. In line with the German phrase, "Ich tue recht und scheue niemand," I do right, do the right things and fear no one. But does this make a real Christian life? A pastor once said, "This is a theology for an ox, but not for a Christian. As long as the ox is on the chain, he does right, he's doing well, but let him off the chain, then he fears nothing." Some years later, with the age of about 23, I got a job in Switzerland at Interlaken in the midst of beautiful mountain scenery. Who has ever been in Interlaken? Berner Oberland? Some. And you know what I'm talking about. A colleague invited me to the sports club, and nearly every weekend I spent with my friends in the mountains, hiking in summer and in winter skiing. I also enjoyed dancing, sometimes till 4 o'clock in the morning, 2 hours sleep, and then getting up to work, no problem in that age. It was a wonderful time. I enjoyed life to the full. The Lord was so good to me, although I did not show real interest in him. But there in Switzerland, something happened to me, unexpected. It turned out, as you remember, was mentioned in the book of Ruth last Sunday, it turned out that God appeared slowly on stage. of my life. At a camping weekend in Ticino, my friend and I, we were sitting at the beach of Lago Maggiore, chatting, enjoying the beach, when two young men came along, and soon we found ourselves in midst a lively conversation about Christian life. This was somehow the beginning of God knocking at my door. Not with a loud bang, but when looking back, I can say I started opening my windows and listened to his voice. Soon after, some other committed Christians crossed my ways. For instance, a group of young people invited me to a New Year's evening party. We had good food, barn dancing, and a lot of fun. Then at midnight, the host said, "We all enjoyed this evening. Now we want to give thanks to the Lord and pray together." Before, I had not really prayed. But this experience created in me the longing to be in permanent contact and in conversation with Christ. We just sang, "There is a deep cry in my heart." And I think this was created by the Lord in my heart that time. And his love started to lift me. Soon after, I went to Lebanon as a volunteer for 2 years to help in a Christian orphanage. And this was the first time I experienced real Christian fellowship. Then, after 2 years coming back to Stuttgart, I wanted to change my profession, but I had no idea how and in which direction. But one thing I knew, I needed Christian fellowship. After only a few weeks, it turned out that two young people visited me at my home and invited me to a Christian group for young adults called Der offene Abend. Right at my first visit there, I felt at home. And something else happened at that first meeting. I saw her. 20 years later, this fellowship sent us out together to Africa as their 13th and 14th missionaries. I cannot say that my conversion happened on a certain day in my life. As I look back, I think God was not in a hurry to get me. It was a process of about 2 or 3 years. God pulled me closer to him. This might be a reason why I hesitate to say, "I gave my life to Christ." I know that long before I was able to make a decision to commit my life to him, he had decided to give his life for me. This is more important than everything else. Of course, it's necessary to respond to his decision for me. But can you imagine? You decide to follow Jesus. You make an application as you would do for a job by a company. "Jesus, I want to follow you." And Jesus would reply, "Fine, but give me some time to think about. I will come back to you." And after some time, you will find a letter in your letterbox telling you, "Sorry, despite all your qualities and your seriousness, I don't want you in my company." Then your decision would be good for nothing if he would not have said yes to you. It is not that Jesus needs me, but I need him. And it is he who took the initiative for my and your faith, as we read in the chapter of Hebrews, as Don read to us, verse 2, "Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author, the beginner, and perfecter of our faith." Why do we need to fix our eyes on Jesus. Because as sinful and weak people, we can easily grow weary and lose heart. A good example is the life of the Apostle Peter. John, in his Gospel, reports the intimate conversation between the Lord and Peter. Jesus says to Peter, "When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went where you wanted, as I did. But now you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you." Peter believed and even followed Jesus with all the consequences. "I have decided to follow Jesus." This was Peter. But still, he lived according to his own ideas, his own theology. And how quickly did he lose heart? "Before the cock crows, you will deny me." And soon after, we read, he wept bitterly. We are not the first ones who easily lose heart. And we are not the first ones who need encouragement. The writer of the letter to the Hebrew Christian says, "We are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses." Who are these witnesses and what are they good for? They are, one, men and women from the Bible. They bear witness to us how they had to struggle in life against hardship, temptations, and obstacles, and how the Lord in his faithfulness pulled them through. They encourage us not to give up, but to put our confidence in the same Lord. Two, likewise, are we encouraged by God's people we know from church history? And three, by God's people who are alive today. And some of them have crossed our ways and we got encouraged as we met them personally. Some prominent, some ordinary Christians. Maybe you remember in your own life like I do. A Christian life means to be on the way. Jesus says, "I am the way." And that way is often not a highway where you just speed forward. Sometimes it leads us through deep valleys or stormy times. Then I need to be encouraged. Therefore, I love to get guidance by studying the Lord's roadmap and also read biographies of other Christians who had been on the way. The letter to Hebrew Christians is a letter of encouragement, of pastoral care. In chapter 12, we are told to do two things: to let go and to take on. To let go, sin. And we know what it is in our lives. And to take on means to fix our eyes on Jesus. The question is now, are we willing to obey or not? In chapter 11 in the book of Hebrews, some witnesses encourages from the cloud, which is mentioned in chapter 12. In verse 8 in chapter 11, we read, "By faith, Abraham, when he called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he did not know where he was going." Just think for a moment. Abraham said, "Yes, Lord, I believe you. One day you will fulfill your promises, and in faith I will sit here and wait." Or he would have said, "Lord, just wait a moment, let me get the roadmap." "And then you show me which roads you want me to go, and then you show me the place where I should arrive." Nothing of that. Maybe we in our days, we would say, okay, Lord, you tell me then when to go, and maybe with the GPS you give me the input, and such things. You know, I'm not saying it is wrong to plan for our lives. The Lord gave us intelligence and wisdom to do right things. And we really know to distinguish between good and bad for our life. Just last week, I had a telephone call with a friend, and he told me about another friend who was a missionary in Africa, and now being back in Germany, he had problems to find a job. He was, by profession, he was a financial advisor. And then he made applications, and one company had 25 applicants, and they had chosen three for interview. And one of the three was with this friend. And at the end, they wanted him. But at the end, he said no. Isn't that silly? But he said, I cannot take this job. Ich müsste mein Gewissen zu sehr verrenken. I would have to make too many crazy things against God. So he said no. So, planning for life is okay. But sometimes the Lord shows us only a short section. And then he asks us to trust him like Abraham. As a young man, I also had faith in God. I never doubted the existence of God. But I did not obey. I obeyed myself. So my faith without obedience did not make sense. It did not have any consequences for my life. We see here the faith, that faith and obedience belong together, like the two sides of one coin. Therefore, the Apostle Paul often speaks in his letters, obedience of faith, he says. Real faith means, I trust you, Lord, and therefore I obey you in all areas of my life, even when only the next few steps ahead are visible. Otherwise, we will hardly realize how trustworthy he is. But we never can prove the delights of his love until all on the altar we lay. For the favor he shows and the joy he bestows are for them who will trust and obey. Then in fellowship sweet we will sit at his feet, or we will walk by his side in the way. What he says we will do, where he sends we will go. Never fear, only trust and obey.